Yeah, you can find his work for Comcast Sportsnet online, csnnw.com. He's talking Ducks on Comcast Monday nights, Channel 737 in high def on your Xfinity. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. He's got the Duck Squad podcast with Bree Amaranthus. When the hell do you sleep? Aaron Fentress joins us.
I never sleep.
We started having this crazy conversation about a play associated with either a pro franchise or a college program. Like if somebody said Boston College, you'd say Flutie to Phelan. And we came down to, with the Bulls, is it the posterization of Elo or the gorgeous follow-through after he posterized Byron Russell to win the title? What would you say is the play in Bulls history?
Ooh.
It's a good one, isn't it?
You know, can I say a tie, or is that cheap?
No, it's a legit answer because, you know, if you think about certain franchises.
They're kind of bookends.
Yeah, one started it and one ended it, right?
Right, because at the time, when they beat Cleveland that year, I remember there was a lot of people saying Jordan would never win it.
Right.
He's just too much of a scorer, blah, 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 blah. I remember in college arguing with people about this. Like serious, heated, we're not going to be friends anymore arguments at the dinner table, you know, in the UC, you know, about this. And so when he hit that shot, that propelled them further that year. And then, of course, they started, you know, going further and further from that point on. But had they lost again in the first round, I think that was 90? Or was it 89? 89,
no,
right?
That was before, because then it was like they advanced, then it was could they solve the Pistons, then they were in, then they were the
right.
Dynasty.
But that was 89, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
89, yeah. Because the year before that was in 88. I think they were first round and out, and the year before that was when Boston swept them. I can't remember. But anyway.
You're right, no, when so Jordan had the 63-point really game, but they lost.
Okay. Did you lose me? Huh?
I said when Jordan had the 63-point game, but they got swept by the Celtics.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, so for me, the Elo thing really is – it's sort of like the 90 – like Wheaton's play
yep.
for the Ducks. That Elo shot.
You know,
shot over Elo.
As a lifelong Bears fan, somebody said, considering their history, we couldn't come up with a Bears play that really stuck out. Maybe Fridge scoring in the Super Bowl – and I was like, or maybe for misery, Hugh Douglas knocking Jim Miller out of the game in the 0-1 playoffs.
I think if there is one, it was Wilbur Marshall returning the fumble in the snow against the Rams.
Huh.
Because it was like that sort of iced the game of the Bears going to their first Super Bowl.
Right,
and
right.
In Chicago, for sure, it's sort of an iconic one because the snow's coming down. The slow motion version of it is really, really sweet. But that was like the moment in the NFC Championship game where, like, I mean, you kind of knew they were going to win, but it was like that was the moment of that game where, like, wow, they're going to the Super Bowl for the first time ever. That's the only one I can really think of.
Good. Yeah, I completely forgot.
They don't have really the catch. They don't have, you know, pulling one out last second type because the only championship they won, they just throttled it.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of drama against the Giants, the Rams, and the Patriots that year.
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
That's awesome. All right, so on the podcast, I heard you and Bree talking about the Dylan Brooks ejection. I like how she incorporated Bruce Lee. I saw it from multiple angles. What was your read? I know intent is difficult to determine. Was the flagrant foul too justified?
You know, I wasn't watching that game. I can't remember what I was doing, but I went on Twitter to sort of check and see what was going on with it, and I didn't watch the second half. So when I got that's right, I turned it on at halftime. That's right, and the Brooks wasn't out there. And I heard them talking about no Brooks. I'm like, what the hell happened to Brooks? So I went on Twitter and I searched Dylan Brooks and I saw this talk about the kick, and I'm like, whoa, he kicked somebody. So and everyone's talking about how dirty it was, how horrible it was. So then I went and found the video and I watched it. I'm like, what? How could anyone not look at this and notice that it obviously was an accident? Like, he clearly – and I took some screenshots and I tweeted them out. So, I mean, but here's what I'll say, though. In the official's defense, it's a bang-bang thing.
Yep.
And I don't think they can go and review it, right? So all you see is a guy falling, and then he kicks the guy in the groin. And if you're a guy, your initial reaction is going to be, oh, that ain't right. And so they just felt like, on principle, you got to call him for something. So I give the officials the benefit of the doubt because they didn't have the ability to go back and watch the slow-mo and watch it over and over. But clearly, to me, it was an accident.
I want to get some Oregon football. But first, with the Blazers having such an erratic season, I mean, we talked about it before. Sometimes this defense is just non-existent. And then they hold the Cavaliers to 86 points. From kind of, well, this is who they are, to they'll get better as the season moves along. What do you make of, I guess, combined last night and the Blazer team so far?
Well, I tweeted the other day that they're going to turn things around, and noted that they were 15-24 at this point last year. I said this a couple of days ago. They're 2-0 since I tweeted that. So I think the success clearly is connected to me and my Twitter account.
Okay. Well, that's logical.
Well, no, I mean, it is. No. Look, this team is too talented to continue, I think, playing the way they've been playing. Defensively, they should be a lot better because they have length and they have athletes. I mean, if you have length and athletes, you should play good defense just by the virtue of the fact that you have a bunch of long arms and legs and you're sliding over and you're being disruptive. So I think they're going to figure it out. Beating the Lakers on the road, beating Cleveland at home, nice, but Cleveland's in the middle of a long road trip. These things kind of happen. So I'm not going to make too big a deal out of it, but I do think they will get back to 500 and above before it's over. I just think it's going to come together at some point, sort of like it did last year. It's just going to take a little time.
Talk with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sports Net. I'm not usually somebody who follows recruiting closely until, you know, literally NLI day. But you covered it. Willie Taggart is kind of loading up some pretty prominent and well-respected assistants. Yeah. So how much of an impact on recruiting you think this all adds up to?
Well, he's put together pretty much a recruiting all-star coaching staff, it seems like.
Sure does.
You know, every time I turn around – so the other day I posted a story that the Ducks were close to signing hiring Salavea. And all of a sudden, all these Washington State fans start freaking out. Like they're retweeting it and going, no way, this can't happen, oh my God. And I thought it was a nice, you know, going to be a nice hire. But, you know, assistant coaches move and it happens. I did not expect that type of response. So clearly, you know, I was clueless in terms, and I'll be first to admit, when it comes to assistants around the conference, I couldn't tell you anything about who's a great recruiter, who's not. To me, when they win, that means they must have some good players, right? So,
yep.
But what people were saying, obviously, is that he had just completely transformed their defense from the inside out because he reinvented the D-line. He was able to get guys there they weren't able to get before. He coached them up really well. And I remember their run defense last year was really good. They did a pretty good number on Oregon. So, you know, clearly this is a guy, I mean, and they're going to pay him a ridiculous amount of money, and they're going to make him associate head coach as well, which is a title that he wanted. I understand that Washington State, I was told by a source that Washington State matched what Oregon's paying him, which was around $500,000 maybe, but that he's getting the title of associate head coach or assistant head coach, which, you know, improves his standing, so to speak. So all around the stat, I mean, Levitt's a good get, clearly. If they can get Cristobal from Alabama to be the OC, if that comes through. I don't think it has yet, but I've been told that virtually a done deal. We'll see, unless something's changed. I haven't seen or heard of. But they're going to have a really good staff in terms of going out and connecting with kids and making them interested in Oregon. Now, we'll see if they can pull. Now, I see people not freaking out, but getting all excited about what they've done so far. And I'm like, really? They've got a couple 3-star guys from Florida. 3-star guys go on trees. Oregon gets at least their entire classes, there are at least 3-star guys every year.
Right.
So if this coaching staff is really going to make huge strides in recruiting for Oregon, they need to be getting 10 4-star kids a year. Now, they get a pass for this recruiting class, totally. I mean, you got a pass. Give them a pass because they just took over. By the 2018 recruiting class, though, if this staff is so great and they can do things that have never really been done at Oregon consistently in terms of recruiting, they're going to be getting, you know, top 15, 16 ranked classes on a continual basis, continuously, consistent basis. If not, then it's just more of the same.
You know, I've got to throw this out here. I know you have an appreciation for history. When I first started doing this show, we're talking it was a year or two before the BCS started, and Joe Paterno and Bobby Bowden became million-dollar head coaches with their reputation and people were freaking out about what's wrong with college football. It's pro now. And you just mentioned a line coach at Oregon getting $500,000. I mean, isn't that insane where the money has gone in kind of less than 20 years? Wow.
My first year covering Oregon was 2004, and I remember the offensive coordinator was Andy Ludwig, who actually was my receivers coach at Portland State.
Oh, wow.
And I remember tripping over the fact that he made $150,000 a year. I was like, wow. I was like, damn, that's a lot of money. He's an OC. Now, you know, that's like $150,000. That's, you know, the assistant special teams punt block specialist coaches. I'm exaggerating, but it's incredible what has happened to the salaries in coaching. Meanwhile, the players are eating top ramen.
I'm
exaggerating, but you get what I'm
saying. I get it. You know who gets paid $150,000 a year? The guy who runs out and gets the tee after the kickoff.
Someday that could be true. He's the greatest tee retriever in the history of college football, 4-star recruit.
I actually brought that up to Bilotti many years ago. We were joking around. I was like, one game, let me go get the tee.
He would let you do it?
I never followed up on it. I really should have. I dogged myself there. So we know eventually each coach is going to put their handprints on a program. And, you know, from win the day to now with Coach Taggart, it's have a good day if you want. You wrote a story
about something.
He's kind of got me. You wrote a story about him telling guys, you know, some of this crap is over. He pulled the numbers of the players wearing single digits, said you got to earn it. What do you make of this and kind of the message it sends?
Well, just like you said, man, they have to earn it. You know, single digits are very coveted. You know, guys that had it yanked obviously care the most. I'm sure some guys on the team think, ooh, I could steal that. It's a little weird because not everyone wants a single digit. And if they do it like Virginia does, I was reading the New York Times about this. Virginia said they basically just have a draft. So it's not just a single digit. It's all the numbers are up for grabs. But the bottom line is, you know, from what I understand, in South Florida, single digits were, like, very coveted, and they were, you know, the baddest guys on the team had single digits. You got to earn that, and that's what he's doing here. And it's sort of sending a message to guys that, you know, even if you're returning – because you got to figure it. If the upperclassmen and starters get first choice or dibs on numbers, then your best players probably are all single-digit guys. If you look at the single-digit list, most of them were starters or impact players. I think only a couple weren't exactly. But you're telling those guys, okay, yeah, you may have been starters, you may have been impact players, you may have been, you know, big time or what have you, but you have to re-earn the right to select the number you want and have these coveted numbers. So it's a nice thing. I don't think it's something that, you know, makes or breaks the world, but I think it definitely gives people an incentive to fly straight and do well. And I also talked in that article about, you know, him laying down the law and letting people know that, you know, the shenanigans that have been going on, some of the off-field stuff, some of the laziness, some of the not following your rules, things that maybe Helfrich was too lackadaisical on. And, you know, things that actually Andrew Greif of the Oregonian wrote a very detailed, long article about this subject. I just touched on it on the other day in my jersey number story. But, you know, guys were doing things they shouldn't be doing, parking where they're not supposed to be parking, being late for things, skipping things, you know, not following through on things. I mean, stuff, you know, going out to bars and clubs when they were specifically told not to. You know, I talked about that in my article. Andrew went into more in depth about that exact same story. But, you know, that kind of stuff, like, you know, what are you kids thinking? Well, you know, Helfrich, if he had a major fault, it was that he let things slide a bit. And I've heard from sources who say that, you know, people on staff are telling him, dude, you gotta fix this or we're all going to be in trouble. And Helfrich, you know, he did well with – I mean, here's the thing. Guys who committed serious offenses, like Prevost, suspended. Heard, suspended.
Right.
Alalata, kicked off the team. But – it's the little things. You can't baby them on the little things. You have to hold guys accountable, and they did not do a good job with that. Now, I still think they could have fixed that. I mean, they fixed it after 06 when things were falling apart. I think the staff could have, you know, reeled this thing back in. But Taggart's coming in and basically letting everyone know that I know that you guys were acting a fool, and you're not going to do that on my watch. And seriously, and I've talked to people about that. I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
I got you.
That's pretty much what's going on. However, I've also heard some other things that there's already been some double standards in play with some guys. So, again, I've heard this, but it's early on in all of this to say if any of it's going to mean anything. Because the bottom line, you know this and I do, it's all about winning, right?
Yep.
So if they had been better in 2016 and gone 9-3 or 10-2 with everything that had gone wrong, none of it would have mattered.
No, we're not having this conversation.
To me, that stuff is being magnified because they were losing, but I don't think they were losing because of that. I think they were losing because they were too young, too injured. They blew it on some recruits early on. They had no upperclassmen leadership. The younger guys, I think, were going to get better and become better leaders, but they made a move. We'll see if Taggart can get things going in the right direction.
Yeah, I kind of have a vision of with Coach Taggart of Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours walking into that redneck bar and saying, there's a new sheriff
in
town. His name's Reggie Hamlin.
And his name is Reggie Hamlin.
So let's wrap with this. I know Pats against Houston looks like a dog. Anything in the NFL playoffs this weekend got you pretty excited to watch?
Oh, yeah. I want to see that Dallas-Green Bay game.
Yep.
Let's see. The Pittsburgh game should be fun. That might be a defensive boring battle. And I want to see Seattle-Atlanta. I definitely think Seattle and Green Bay, they have the ability to go on the road and steal those games. I mean, those are two teams that have Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks going against a rookie quarterback and then going against a guy who – went to the NFC Championship once, but it's been up and down in Matt Ryan. So those are two. If ever one of those two road teams is going to win, I'd be shocked if both of them lose. I'm definitely pumped about those two games. Those are going
to
be fun.
All right. Catch all Aaron's got to offer, CSNNW.com, on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. My friend, always appreciate the time and insight. You have yourselves a great one.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.